Hello, everybody. This is Chris with the Come This Far podcast with Chris Taylor. Today's episode is brought to you by Freshly.com. Quality meals delivered right to your door. Get $40 off your first 2 weeks. Go to Freshly.com. Let Freshly do the cooking for you. With Freshly, you can choose from a variety of delicious, fresh, and healthy chef-cooked meals, which are delivered right to your door. All you have to do is heat for 3 minutes, making mealtime and cleanup easier than before. You know, if your family's like mine, things get a little hectic, especially during school and sports seasons. Freshly will send you freshly cooked meals to your door, not frozen. They'll be fresh. Put them in the refrigerator, heat them up, and they are amazing. They do not taste like TV dinners. They taste like real home-cooked meals, and they're delivered directly to your door. You pick your meals from the constantly rotating weekly menu of 30-plus different gluten-free options. All of your meals are prepared and cooked by professional chefs and delivered fresh, never frozen. No shopping, no chopping, no cleanup. Freshly chefs take care of the meal prep for you, from perfecting the meals on your weekly menu to sourcing the best ingredients. And there's nothing artificial about it. They use only high-quality ingredients to make fresh meals. No artificial preservatives or colors, no added refined sugars, and no gluten. Just nutrient-rich food you can feel good about. Heat, eat, enjoy. Save an hour on dinner by heating one of their fully prepared nutritious meals in just 3 minutes. What are you going to do with all that saved time? Let them do the shopping, the prepping, and cooking for you. For customers like you, Freshly has a limited special time offer. 2 weeks of dinners cooked by their chefs for $40 off. It's normally $56.94 per week. Go to Freshly.com today. Actually, go to try.freshly.com for the special offer, limited time only. try.freshly.com. try.freshly.com. You know, some people think that I tell my story to get praise or to, you know, be on the news or be on shows like this. And you don't realize how difficult it is to become so vulnerable and to open your family up to that scrutiny. But I know how important it is, because when a news segment airs, I get hundreds and sometimes thousands of comments and messages and people who are suffering in silence, and they tell me how much inspiration they get. And so I don't want my struggles and everything that I've suffered to be in vain. Like, I really believe that God gives people struggles and trials to overcome them and then to be that hope and help to other people.
And a Safford City Council member is suspending his campaign for Congress.
A Safford City Councilman has suspended his campaign for Congress after suffering a heroin overdose.
His name is Chris Taylor. You may actually know the name very well. It's been very publicized here in the Arizona media and the Arizona press.
Chris Taylor was running for the Republican nomination to challenge Democrat Tom O'Halloran this November.
And tonight, Chris Taylor says he is seeking treatment for substance abuse.
We first met Chris Taylor in 2017 as we dug in on the opioid problem plaguing the eastern Arizona city of Safford.
In a previous campaign ad, Taylor opened up about his struggles with opioid addiction after two tours in Afghanistan.
Taylor, a veteran who fought off addiction to open his own treatment center, was poised to be the success story for Safford. But he went backwards as old demons resurfaced last week. A relapse that resulted in an overdose. In a statement to suspend his congressional campaign, Taylor was very direct, saying, quote, "I'm not going to hide from this. I'm not ashamed of what happened. I wish to sincerely apologize to the amazing people who have supported me. It's a haunting reminder of a dark past that will always be looking over the shoulder of a bright future."
All right, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Come This Far podcast with Chris Taylor. I am your host, Chris Taylor. And today, you know, this is what gets me so tongue-tied, this issue, because I've never known where to stand. And it's another one of these issues that I don't understand why it is so partisan, why it is so political, why it is so divisive. I don't get it. And I've never gotten it. I've never really taken a whole lot of time to understand it either. And so that's what I'm hoping to do today with all of you. And I am talking about climate change, global warming, whatever you want to, I don't know, whatever you want to call it. I've been hearing about climate change my entire life. I was born in 1986. You know, the earliest memories I have of politics and the presidency was probably Bill Clinton and Al Gore. The only thing I remember about in real time about George H.W. Bush was the fact that my grandfather had made a joke. It had to have been, you know, it had to have been in 88 when they were 88 when they were running, but he made a joke about the quail and the bush. We've got the quail and the bush now, and I remember that, and I was 2 years old. I mean, it had to, because he was talking about how, and actually, you know, maybe that was caught on a home video, from 1988. So maybe I heard that later. Maybe I didn't hear it in real time. Anyway, the first really thing presidents that I really remember was Bill Clinton and Al Gore. And of course, Al Gore has always been known as you know, that climate change warrior or whatever, which is another reason why, or maybe one reason why it is such a political issue, is Al Gore has been claiming that the world was going to end for many decades, and apparently he's made millions of dollars off of that. So, you know, I do understand why, a little bit why it's political. I do understand because of the forces that be, because of the, you know, of course, everything is partisan now. But at the very core, like, I just don't understand. I just don't understand it. And so hopefully today I've downloaded what I hear is really good information. It's called Climate Crisis 101. It's about learning the basics of climate change science. And I'm just going to kind of look at it for the first time here. And one of the things that I got a lot when I was running for Congress, especially up in the Flagstaff area, Sedona area, they were always asking me what my stance was on climate change. And I just never really knew what to say, because I pride myself as being somebody who listens to science. I don't deny science. It's science and faith go hand in hand with me. I believe that God is, the glory of God is intelligence. He's a being that is vastly superior in knowledge and intelligence. He's not just a magical, mythical figure. The reason that he is God is because he has perfect knowledge. He's progressed so much, you know, through the eternities that he is vastly superior intellectually, intelligently, scientifically, all of that. And that's what I believe. And so for me, when there's always this debate between religion and science and faith and science, like, no, put that together, have both perspectives, and always look at science through that realm of just progressing in knowledge and scientific advancement. Have that, look at that through the realm of you know, eternal progression, spiritually, and everything makes sense. There shouldn't be combative relationship between faith and science and in science advancements, which is why I don't understand the people who swear off modern medicine, swear off vaccines, swear off all of this stuff. It's like, no, this is, we live in the 21st century, and we should reap the benefits of that. Is medicine perfect? Is science perfect? No. But that's why you always continue to have hypotheses, and you conduct experiments, and you gain knowledge, and you have peer-reviewed studies, and you always, you know, evolve and develop and advance. That's how we've gotten to where we are as a human race in such a short period of time. Maybe this, I like the way that where this is going. Maybe this is not just going to be about climate change. Maybe I'll save that for another day. You know, I just, the thing right now that's debated is you know, is COVID really a dangerous disease, or is it just a hoax? Is the vaccine that has been developed in record time, Is that the conspiracies about that's going to harm us? You know, I saw somebody that I really respect, kind of got into a little bit online this weekend about how 181 people apparently, and I don't know if this is factual, but it probably is, 181 people have died, and they as a result or immediately after having the vaccine for COVID-19. And I start to think, well, 70 million, they've say worldwide, 70 million people have received the vaccine. So if 181 people have died after receiving the vaccine, do we really know that, first of all, that is what they died of? Like, how ironic, you know, now these same people are saying that the COVID deaths are inflated because everything, anyone who dies, if they had a positive COVID test within, you know, the last year, they're going to mark that as a COVID death, right? So now those same people are saying, well, 181 people have died after receiving the vaccine. So yeah, they must have died because of the vaccine. And even still, 181 people out of 70 million. Do you know how many people die of an allergic reaction to eating a peanut, or to getting a penicillin shot without knowing that they're allergic to penicillin? Or how many people die of just a regular allergy shot or whatever, you know, whatever. 181 people out of 70 million, I did the calculator math on Sunday. It was like 0.0000004% or something like that. I think that would be categorized as safe Because, I mean, even if that is true, that there's concrete evidence that 181 people died as it, like, right after they took the vaccine. So, like, the vaccine went in their arm. It acted just like a poisonous nerve agent, and they died. Which I don't believe that's the case. I think that these figures that people are showing are either misinformation or loosely based in truth and twisted to provide somebody's narrative. The debate was that the fact that very well respected medical experts and religious experts are saying that this feat that took place, to that the world rallied to get the resources and to cut the red tape and to develop this safe and effective vaccine in record time, is nothing short of a miracle, a God-given miracle. And when I look at that in the perspective that I have, that God is just an intelligent being, vastly more intelligent than any of us. He's not just a magical person that just does things by magic. No, he has a perfect understanding of physics, of all of the laws of I'm gonna sound kind of, you know, like a caveman here, but and that proves the point that, you know, I us humans and definitely me, I'm not a genius by any stretch of the imagination, but my understanding and my belief in who God is and the nature of God, the glory of God, is his intelligence. And so all of these miracles that we have seen just in my lifetime, I'm 34 years old. And when I was born in 1986, think about back how much we have advanced our technology, our knowledge of medicine, you know, our ability to, our lifespans, you know, ability to live longer, be healthier, everything, every answer to complex questions are at the, basically, you can all the knowledge in the world has ever known can be accessed with a click of a button, and you can, you know, as far as your capacity is to learn and understand, may be limited, but the knowledge is there at our fingertips. And the fact that this vaccine for COVID-19 has been developed and is effective, 95% effective, and very safe. You think that if this was a very dangerous vaccine and they just bypassed all of these safety things, which they didn't, that's not where they cut out the time, the process. Basically what they did was they developed the vaccine just like they would any other vaccine, but because of the pandemic and because of the economic and social constraints and burdens, they got together and they figured out how to streamline the process. They didn't make it, they didn't cut any corners. I know that it might seem that way, but they didn't just cut corners and something, they threw this together and here you go, world, we just want our money. That's just not, that just didn't happen. Okay. And you really think that if people were dropping dead of this vaccine, that there wouldn't be every news organization in the world fighting to get that breaking news, to get that scoop. And that's just not happening. If this was true, if this vaccine was killing people, the information wouldn't come from an obscure study pasted onto a meme on Instagram. It would be widely reported. And the reasoning behind it would be sniffed out, and the person behind it or the people behind it would be demonized. And that's just not happening. There's all of these people. It's like the cool thing to do now, to video yourself, film yourself getting the vaccine and posting it on social media. All of these people are still walking around. Which, by the way, I'm not making fun of that. I think that's a great thing to do. The example was set by the last three presidents. They said, we are going to get the vaccine and we are going to film it and we are going to show you that you should not fear this. You should be celebrating this. This is a feat of epic proportions, a historic feat that it will be in history when history is done writing this COVID-19 book. The fact that we were, as a world, were able to develop this effective vaccine in under a year will be one of the top bullet points. Unfortunately, the highest bullet point will be that the leading country in the world was the worst at managing the pandemic. Unfortunately, that will be what is remembered. But also in that, America led the way to develop this vaccine. So where are we on time? 17 minutes. Well, let's get into this real quick then. I will talk a little bit about climate change because I think all of this goes together. It's science. It's where do you stand? I know that the younger generation, even people in my generation, it is important to treat this world that we have as the best we can. And I've always seen it as, look, if there are ways that we can limit the damage that we do to the world without hurting people in the process. So you know, these people that say we should just stop all production of oil and go cold turkey and all this. First of all, people will lose their livelihoods and their jobs. This type of change to renewable energy definitely needs to happen, but there needs to be phased in, right? You can't just come and say all of the oil production is over. Now we're only doing wind and solar. Screw all of you people. That just doesn't work that way. And the other thing is that anything that we do, you know, we have this one of the pitfalls Americans get into a lot is that, you know, we are the center of the universe. We are the center of the world. We are the leaders of the world. But we don't realize that there's a huge world out there, right? China alone has more, way more people. So whatever we do, we have to make sure that it's standard across the whole world. And that's where, you know, things like the Paris Climate Accord come into play. I don't know enough about that. I know that's also a very partisan issue. It's probably not the best agreement, but that kind of cooperation between world governments needs to happen on this. And, you know, we have to have a standardized thing, because if we are going to suffer, if our economy is going to take hits because we're trying to do the right thing, And then Russia and China and India and all of these people, all these countries just go on just to beat us. You know, it's not going to work. So just read here real quick. The climate crisis is the defining challenge of our generation. See, I don't know that right there. That statement right there gets a lot of flack. I don't know if that's true. I just don't know. I'm not denying climate change when I say that. I don't know how much humans have contributed to this or how much of it is just a normal evolution of our planet. It goes in different waves. You know, we had the ice age and then we have, you know, the thawing. So is it just normal ebbs and flows of the climate, or are humans destroying the planet? And can we really do anything to stop that? That is where the debate lies. And to be quite honest, that's something that I just don't know. I don't know enough about it. I never really hear concrete facts and figures and things like that. And then I see competing studies. And to tell you the truth, it's just so mind-boggling that I just shut down and don't want to learn and don't learn. That's why I'm trying to learn right now. And my imagination and my is doing everything to get away from this, because that's just how it is. It's not something that's sexy. It's kind of a cringe word. I don't like that. I don't really like using that word, but you know what I mean? You know, it's not foreign policy. It's not spycraft. It's not, you know, geopolitics. So it's not something that really interests me, but we need level heads to tackle this. And so that's why I hope to learn more. Scientists are clear about the reality of climate change, and we should be too. And with devastating storms, dangerous floods, melting glaciers, and rising seas, those are all things that you can't debate. Those are all happening. We have more devastating storms now than ever before in our history. We have more dangerous floods than ever before in our history. The glaciers are melting. The seas are rising. It's more critical, it goes on to say, it's more critical than ever that we face reality and get working on solutions together. I would agree with that statement. The simple fact is that climate change throws natural systems out of balance, too often devastating effect. What does that mean? Let us explain. Here is a helpful 101 style refresher on what's causing our climate to change and the crisis unfolding in front of our eyes. What do we mean by climate change? When we talk about climate change, we're talking about the change scientists have seen in long-term temperature, precipitation, and wind patterns, thanks to higher levels of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. Here are some clear signs of climate change. Rising average temperatures around the world. Land and ocean temperature departure from average January to December 2016. Oh, that's a graph. More frequent and devastating storms and floods in some parts of the world. So one of the other things that I wish that there was some way that we could capture, because I live in the southern Arizona desert, and we are facing drought conditions. I'm saying this as it's raining right now. That's kind of ironic, because it never rains here, and we're facing a winter advisory storm here. It's supposed to snow overnight down to 2,500 feet, and I live at 3,000 feet. So I'm hoping tomorrow I wake up and there's an inch or two of snow on the ground. That would be amazing for the low desert area of Arizona. I wish there was some way that we could take all of these floods that happen back east and in the Midwest and steal that rain from the air, from the clouds, and just move it over to Arizona. Why hasn't somebody figured that out? Why hasn't somebody figured out how to divert storms from one area and disperse them across the country evenly? That would be great. Science. Elon Musk, where are you on that? And then increasingly long drought. So there's major flooding going on in places, and there's major droughts in other places. The glaciers are melting at record paces. The sea levels are rising. Wow, they have a picture here of the Muir Glacier in Alaska in 1891 versus 2005. 1891, it looks like Antarctica. In 2005, it looks like Lake Mead. Honestly, it does. The picture. Aerial views of damage caused by Hurricane Sandy. Okay, this is pictures. So they say the cause is clear. Where am I? Rising levels of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, primarily from humans burning fossil fuels. Carbon dioxide is the chief culprit, but other gases like methane also play a dangerous role. These gases upset the natural systems that regulate our climate and lead to more extreme weather. If this sounds like a big deal, that's because it is. In fact, we can expect to see our world transformed by climate change during our lifetimes, and if we do nothing, the transformation will be profound. We call this transformation the process of climate change and its many effects on the world, the climate crisis. So it used to be global warming, then it was climate change, and now it's the climate crisis. But there's good news. We can choose to limit rising temperatures to 2 degrees Celsius or less, averting the worst of the climate. We can choose to limit rising temperatures to 2 degrees Celsius or less, and that will avert the worst of the climate, protect our planet. If we limit the rising temperatures to 2 degrees Celsius. What's more, we know how to fight climate change, and we already have the technology to do it. We have to start by burning less fossil fuels and ultimately stop altogether. See, I like that approach. We do need to get more renewable energy, and we have that technology. We just need to develop it. Solar is amazing, but we don't have the battery capacity to make it worthwhile. And that's where Elon Musk and those geniuses come into play with the battery capacity to store that power. So okay, I'm down with that. Move towards less fossil fuels and ultimately stop altogether, which means a global shift to clean energy technologies like solar and wind. I agree with that too. These technologies are getting more affordable and accessible every day. That's true. So we can make this shift while driving healthy economic growth around the world. We can't win this fight alone, but with help from people like you, nothing is impossible. Oh, that's nice. What changes the climate? I'll finish here real quick and then I'll go for a little break. What changes the climate? Greenhouse gases are the primary cause. Okay. Carbon dioxide and other gases released as a result of human activities, burning, industry, electricity, and transportation. More gases in the atmosphere means more of the sun's energy gets trapped in heat. Things keep getting hotter and hotter. Extreme weather events occur as a result of the shifting climate change. Even small changes in global average temperature can cause major dangerous shifts in climate and weather. Just consider the difference between 0 and 1 degrees Celsius. Oh, okay. So when it says, I forgot that 1 or 2 degrees Celsius is 33 degrees Fahrenheit. That's a good place to stop. My daughter just walked in. We will be right back and listening to the Come This Far podcast with Chris Taylor. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Come This Far podcast with Chris Taylor. I am your host, Chris Taylor. And as the rain pours down here in the desert, it is 38 degrees. We are under a winter advisory here in the desert. I live at about 3,000 feet elevation. The up in the mountains surrounding where I live has been snowing all day. It is drizzling here now. Hopefully we wake up tomorrow morning with a couple inches of snow stuck on the ground, because that is a very rare occurrence in the low southern Arizona desert. And it's ironic that the first time it rains in many, many months, we are talking about climate change. I mentioned in the first part of this video how I've always been open to the fact that climate change is a crisis, and that we can avert it. But it's just never really appealed to me to like understand it fully. And I'm never want to be known as a science denier. And that label gets thrown around too often when it comes to climate change and where you stand on what we should do about it. I'm the type of person that believes that we should definitely, if we can do things, we can take necessary, reasonable steps to reverse this, or at least limit the damage that we do to our world without devastating industries and jobs and people's livelihoods. I'm all for that. And I don't think anybody can really argue, except for the big oil lobbyists, which all too often the big oil and all that have a stranglehold on the Republican Party and the politicians that run the party. It's no secret. So, but like I said, nobody can debate, no reasonable person can debate that we ought to move towards renewable energy, clean energy, and not just for the climate, not just for the planet, but you know, to create jobs and to get away from not only, you know, the damaging effects that fossil fuels have on our environment, but also our dependence on foreign oil. And we have done that quite a bit, taken steps to do that quite a bit in recent years. But what we should be doing is putting all of our efforts into renewable energy. And solar is at the point now where the technology has always been there. The problem has been the battery capacity, that the capacity of our battery backup power, because, you know, you have to be able to store that. And that's one of the reasons that I never have gone to solar on my home. I get the salesman's come around all the time, especially in southern Arizona, wanting to outfit my home with a solar setup. I can get off of the grid and all that stuff, but I have too many friends that have done that, and then they tell me that, you know, they were their setup was undersized, or their battery backup, you know, it's just not where it needs to be. And so not only are they paying off their loan for the solar, but they still have to pay the utilities, the electricity companies, whether it's the, you know, city or the other power businesses at corporations. And it's like, man, I'll wait for Elon Musk to, you know, develop his stuff a little bit farther. And that's where we're heading, and that's a good thing, as well as wind. I think wind is a good thing, except I don't want to look at those huge wind-powered windmills like you see when you drive into California, from Arizona. That, I mean, we can't have that everywhere, you know. But the big solar farms also are kind of, I don't know. See, this is just me thinking out loud. It truly is. So let's move on here with the climate. So I just was realizing that 1 degree Celsius is 32 or 33 degrees Fahrenheit. That 1 degree means the difference between ice and water. That's true. Burning fossil fuels isn't the only thing contributing to rising levels of carbon dioxide. Deforestation, cutting down trees on a large scale for fuel, land, or other purposes, leads to more greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. As more trees are burned and fewer are in the ground to absorb excess carbon. So that's why the hippies don't want logging to happen. But then when they don't let logging happen, not only does it kill an industry, but it also creates undergrowth that is combustible, and then a whole mountain lights up and burns and kills every wildlife in the area. It kills the beautiful landscapes. It kills all this. So again, just like everything, we should have a balance. We shouldn't be one extreme or the other. We should allow logging to take place because it's an industry that a lot of areas depend on. It creates jobs. It also cuts down on the undergrowth and where there's fire danger. But we can't do it too much to where there's not enough trees to absorb the excess carbon. See, all of this I understand. I wish that people would talk about this in a way that it's not just political spin and talking points. Is climate change real? This is the next page. In a word, yes. Scientists are crystal clear about the relationship between carbon pollution and climate change. Many of the attacks on climate science have come from oil and coal companies. That's no surprise. That's like the big tobacco companies that are angry when people talk about how bad cigarettes are for you. It hurts their bottom line. We always have to understand the ins and outs, the real motives of people. Many of the attacks on climate change, okay, I just read that. From oil and coal companies and their allies who see climate solutions like clean energy as a threat to their business. But instead of facing reality, they attack the science behind our understanding of climate change. Then there's the smaller set of climate deniers who believe scientists and governments are engaged in a nefarious worldwide hoax, regardless of the evidence. Oh, wow. I didn't even read this part, but it says, just as the tobacco industry once attempted to confuse the public about the link between smoking and cancer. I swear I didn't read that. That just came to my mind. Big polluters like oil and coal companies have spent decades running well-funded campaigns to mislead and deceive the public about what's really happening to the planet. That's not surprising. It's really not surprising to me. Climate deniers willing to concede that the world is getting warmer will often argue that there is not scientific consensus, that it's due to human activity. This is also wrong. How many of you have heard that, right? I hear that all the time. Well, the scientists don't even agree that climate change is because of human activity. They're saying here that this is wrong. How certain are scientists, you might ask? That's the question. And the graphic here says 98 doctors tell you to treat your son this way, to say no, this other. It's not conservative to go with the two. That's a quote from Bob Inglis, former representative of South Carolina, Republican. When over 97% of climate scientists tell us fossil fuels are driving the climate crisis, taking action isn't about ideology. So in short, scientists are very certain. Over 97%, nearly 98% of climate scientists agree that man-made climate change is a reality. Virtually every National Academy of Science on Earth agrees. In an urgent letter to members of the U.S. Congress, the leaders of 18 different major scientific associations wrote, "Observations throughout the world make it clear that climate change is occurring, and rigorous scientific research demonstrates that the greenhouse gases emitted by human activities are the primary driver." And by the way, this site that I'm reading from, I will add a link to it. It's climaterealityproject.org, and they do cite every single figure where you and the information comes from verifiable sources, credible sources. It's not just a meme someone put together on Facebook, you know, so you always have to check the source. You always have to do your research and do your due diligence to see if you have a competing statistic. You can't just cite it and say, oh, see that. You have to show us where you got that information. The Earth has experienced cycles of warming and cooling in the past. This is another common argument that deniers or people who don't want to engage in this discussion shut it down by saying, well, the Earth has always experienced cycles of warming and cooling. But it says here that experts believe the current warming trend is proceeding at a rate that is unprecedented in the past 1,300 years. For comparison's sake, climate scientists have estimated the planet has previously taken around 5,000 years to recover by warming between 4 to 7 degrees Celsius after an ice age has ended. I wish they would use Fahrenheit. I don't like Celsius. It screws me up. In the 20th century alone, the average surface temperature increased by 0.8 degrees Celsius. So that's close to 33 degrees Fahrenheit. A rate 8 times faster than the typical post-ice age recovery. And this cycle is rapidly accelerating. So they don't deny that that the Earth does go through periods and cycles of warming and cooling. But the rate that we're on right now is unprecedented. See, that's what they should say. They should just say that. How do we know that this is true? We know the Earth is getting hotter. The following data comes from satellites and a host of other measurements. The world has already warmed about 1.5 degrees Fahrenheit since 1880. It says the world has already warmed about 0.8 degrees Celsius or 1.5 degrees Fahrenheit. I thought 1 degree Celsius was 33 degrees or 32 degrees Fahrenheit. Huh. 15 of the 16 hottest years on record have occurred in the 21st century. We're not getting more heat energy from the sun to drive this warming, according to NASA. So the sun isn't putting out any more heat. It has to be something else. Furthermore, average ocean temperatures have risen 0.3 degrees since 1969. Warmer oceans mean less sea ice, particularly in the Arctic, where the extent of and thickness of sea ice has declined rapidly over the last several decades. All right, these are things that, you know, I don't want to bore you, and I don't want to get bored. So I'm not going to read every single one of these things. Higher levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere leads to the ocean leads oceans to become 30% more acidic since the 19th century. Since oceans absorb greater levels of carbon dioxide and turn it into carbonic acid, the greater acidity prevents shellfish from building healthy skeletons and causes coral reefs to bleach and die off, with ripple effects up and down the food chain. And that's just the oceans. Scientists have also traced strong connections between rising temperatures and greenhouse gases on one hand, and increasingly frequent and dangerous storms, longer droughts, increasing danger from wildfires, and changes to global water cycle on the other. That's another one. The wildfires that we see in California and Washington and Oregon and Arizona. Oh, man, it's biblical. Why should we care? The simple fact is that global temperature rise throws natural systems out of balance. We are already beginning to see what a warmer future has in store for us. Rainstorms, severe droughts, powerful tropical cyclones, extreme heat waves, rising sea levels, displacement of nearly half of the world's population. See, that right there is scary to me. Displacement of nearly half of the world's population due to climate change. Flooding coastal areas are literally swallowing entire islands. Populations of animals are dying out. These are not wildly alarmist projections either. They're based on solid science. The climate crisis has real and dangerous impacts on public health as well. This is especially true for the most vulnerable among us, children, the elderly, and the poor, who are at risk from heat stress, air pollution, and extreme weather events. And unless we act, we could see the impacts become even more pronounced in the very near future. Do we want to condemn our children, our grandchildren, and everyone who comes after to living in a world devastated by climate crisis? Or do we want to be the generation that discovered the courage to act and rose to solve the greatest challenge humanity has ever faced? It's our choice. I sound like a spokesman for these people, but really I'm just reading this for the first time. But it is making sense. Climate change is already happening. How much the climate warms in the future is up to us. This is under the section, What Can We Do? And it looks like we are coming to the end of this. It's true that even if we completely stopped emitting carbon pollution today, average global temperatures would continue their upward trajectory for some time. The carbon pollution driving climate change stays in the atmosphere for hundreds of years. So it is difficult to stop the crisis in its tracks. What we can do is stop adding to all the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere so that the warming slows and the planet has a chance to recover. We can do it by working to reach net zero carbon emissions by the second half of the century. If we act now to transition to clean energy technologies like solar and wind, we can limit global warming to no more than 2 degrees Celsius. While also creating many, many new jobs in fields as diverse as construction, transportation, manufacturing, research and development, operations, engineering, and much, much more. See, that should be the real driver of the persuasion or influence to influence the conservative right into action, is showing and exhibiting where, you know, the job, this would be an economic driver. If we really kick things into gear, to get real about renewable energies, and come to the conclusion that fossil fuel is a dying industry, and why not be on the cutting edge? These entrepreneurs that want to better our situation will create jobs. The free market will just capture this and drive it like it always has in other facets of our society and economy. You know, if we really do this and we came together and said, okay, let's stop the partisan spin. Let's stop the con artists like Al Gore who are getting rich off of this crisis. And let's just come at it as a human race. And let's see the benefits of putting these gears into action, the jobs it will create, the atmosphere that it will clean, you know, the pollution that it will cut out. If we can reach, and this is saying that we just have to reach net zero carbon emissions by the second half of the century. So by 2050, we have 30 years to get there. It talks about how we can take action, contact your leaders about climate crisis. I think that just by educating ourselves about it and getting the partisan politics out of it is a big step, because I know that a lot of you who listen to this that are conservatives that, you know, it's not the cool thing in the Republican Party to talk about climate change and talk about what we can do about it. And that's unfortunate because we just need to take an even approach to it. A moderate approach to everything would be where we can come together. So I hope that I will continue to educate myself on this. This is very interesting. It's always been interesting to me, but I've never been able to drown out the noise, the talking heads on both sides, the alarmists, the deniers. Like, I just can never find that groove in the middle where it's like, okay, what can we do about it? Let's do things. Let's not just talk about it. Let's find where we can come together, where we can tackle this. No, AOC, we're not going to stop airline travel tomorrow. We're not going to just cut out the fossil fuel industry overnight. These things can't happen. We have to be rational and reasonable about it. We should set goals and reasonable ones, attainable ones, like this net zero carbon emissions by 2050, and move towards doing what we can to help those industries that are developing our solar and wind technology, particularly in the battery capacity field. That's where, you know, we focus more on, you know, electric cars, battery powered cars. But let's use that same infrastructure to develop what we need to really be clean energy completely by 2050. I hope we can do that, and I hope we can cut out all of this political garbage from it and just see things for what they really are. So what I've learned today is, yes, the world does go in cycles of cooling and warming, but this, in recent years, the rate at which we are warming is unprecedented. And 98% of all the scientific community agrees that it is driven by human activity, by greenhouse gases, emissions, carbon emissions, and we can reverse it and stop it by doing a few simple things. But we also can't go to the extremes of denying it. We can't go to the extremes of saying we're going to kill all fossil fuel industry today. We have to put in place incremental approach to enacting clean energy policies. And also we need to talk more about the benefits to the economy and the benefits to high-paying jobs that come from a result of moving to this clean energy. Yes, will there be oil and gas jobs that will be lost? Yeah, but those same people, if we do it right, will be able to transition right into the same pay, but in a clean energy job. This is where I wish that big oil would take the lead on this, realizing that the world is going to run out of oil at some point anyway. So why not move towards solar and wind and other renewable energies? I guess that's easier said than done. And that's probably because there's a lot of profit, more profit in selling oil. But there was a lot of profit in selling cigarettes too. So we just got to remember where we get our information, the sources behind it, whose motives are what, and try to drown out the noise. Thanks for listening to the Come This Far podcast with Chris Taylor. Science is real. I believe in it. As a man of faith and a man of science, those go hand in hand for me. They always have and they always will. Lot to think about. There's a lot to think about here. Anyway, thanks for being on this ride with me. Thanks for diving into this debate on climate change, climate crisis, and what we can and should be doing, and how we can really tackle this issue. I'll see you guys in the next episode. You're listening to the Come This Far podcast, and I am your host, Chris Taylor.